Okay, Parshas Bo. Parshas Bo, Tavshin, Samach Tes. Now, our subject today is not usually one that women spend a lot of time researching because it's entirely about tefillin. But nevertheless, it's Lima Torah, and the ideas that we learn are appropriate and applicable for men and for women. And although we are putter from the mitzvah of tefillin because it's a mitzvah aseh shezman grama, it's a time-bound mitzvah, and we're putter, we know that there were some women who did wear tefillin, and of course any mitzvah that we're putter from that we do, we do it as a mitzvah of a osa, we're not commanded, and yet we do it. And of course there's a schar for it. However, it's generally the minhag of women to work on all of the various mitzvahs that we are obligated in before we take on mitzvahs that we're not obligated in. In any case, we will be spending time analyzing the wording of the four parashiyos and the tefillin shel Rosh. And I guess it's appropriate, being that Baruch Hashem, thank God, we had the privilege of being in Eretz Yisrael. My son just put on tefillin, so there's a lot of tefillin Torah going around. So I guess we're in that mindset. So in any case, here's what we're going to do. We're going to identify the four parashiyos and the tefillin shel Rosh, and we're going to carefully analyze the wording in them. And the ideas that we're going to work with come from Rav Tzadok HaKohen, the Prit Tzadok. Those are the ideas that we will be working with primarily, but you'll hear some other ideas from some other places also. Now, so if you have a paper and a pen, we're going to make four charts, four columns. And we're going to compare and contrast the four parashiyos and the Shel Rosh. Each of them, of course, have a reference in them to putting on the tefillin Shel Yad and the tefillin Shel Rosh. But there's also other ideas contained in each parsha, and the way that mitzvah is expressed is not exactly the same in each parsha. So, here's how we start. The one that appears first chronologically is in Parshas Bo, Perek Yud Gimel, beginning with Pasuk Beis. Now, we're going to call this Kadesh, okay? Kadesh Li. That's how we're going to refer to this first parsha in the Tefillin Shel Rosh. As from this point on, it's called Kadesh Li, okay? So on top right, Kadesh Li, and let's look through it and point out a few important points that we're going to compare. So first is the following. Kadesh Li kol bachor, peter kol rechem. This identifies the mitzvah of sanctifying the firstborn. Peter rechem. Now there's a firstborn of a mother, and there's a firstborn of the father. In terms of Kedusha, it's the firstborn of the mother. I'm not talking about Yerusha, inheriting Pishnayim, double. But in terms of the Kedusha of the Bechor, it goes through the mother. So this is the mitzvah of being Mekadesh, of sanctifying the first that issues forth from a person, from an animal. It's considered sanctified. In addition, Moshe tells them to remember that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out in the springtime. We're not going to go into each of these details. And then it says, "V'haya kiv'yiviyach Hashem el eretz haknani." When Hashem brings you to the land, you will eat matzahs for 7 days to commemorate this holiday, of course, of Pesach. And here comes the famous section, and this is very relevant to us, that is included in the Gemara. "V'higadata l'bincha v'yom ahu le'mor, b'avor ze'a asa Hashem li b'tzeisi mimitzrayim." You will tell your child on that day in the future that we're doing all of this because God took us out of Mitzrayim. Remember that they only did the laws of Pesach in Mitzrayim they did the halachas of Pesach in Mitzrayim in the second year in the Midbar, and then when they got to Eretz Yisrael, so that there were a lot of halachas that the children didn't see in the Midbar, and they would ask when they got to Eretz Yisrael what this is all about, this Chag LaHashem of 7 days. And you'll tell them, we're doing this because Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. Now, who remembers which child asked this question? Or doesn't, or, no, this is the Gadata Labincha Bayomahu. This is the She'ena De'elishol. It's very important that this is attributed to the child who doesn't know how to ask any questions. You just initiate. The Gadata Labincha. And when it says the Gadata Labincha here, is it talking about your biological child? Or is it talking about general teaching Talmidim? This is your biological child. Very important. So, v'higadata l'bincha, to your child. That's a Shein HaDei Elishol, the person who doesn't know how to ask. And what do you tell him? You tell him that we're doing all this because of the great miracles and how Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. Now, Vahaya, this is the reference to Tefillin. Vahaya lecha laos al yadecha. So, how is the mitzvah of Tefillin officially recorded here? Vahaya lachem laos al yadecha. And it should be to you as a sign on your hand. Does it tell us here to make Tefillin, to put on the tefillin? Is this an active form or a passive form? And it should be for you a sign on your hands. Clearly, v'haya lecha is passive, and it should be. What should be? This parsha, which talks about Yetzias Mitzrayim, what Hashem did for us, that and how important the Bechor is, that should be a sign on your hand. Ulezikaron, and as a memory, b'nei necha, between your eyes, which is up here, of course, not between the eyes. L'man tiyat Torah Hashem b'ficha, in order that Hashem's Torah should be in your mouth, you should be conversant of it, conversant in the Torah, and you should know that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. So here tefillin is called, it's related to us in a passive way, v'haya l'cha l'os, it shall be for you a sign, and it's singular, l'cha, and it's a sign that Hashem took you out of Mitzrayim, and it's a memory, it reminds you that Hashem took you out of Mitzrayim, and that's how the mitzvah, the first parsha is represented to us. Now, it continues, and the mitzvah of tefillin, the mitzvah of remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim by putting something between our eyes and on our arm, is again repeated in the next section. Now, this section is called V'haya Ki Yiviyacha. Okay, that's parsha number two. V'haya Ki Yiviyacha, and according to Rashi, you put them in the tefillin in order. Rabbeinu Tam, we'll see, has a different order, and there are some that wear both Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. Okay, V'haya Ki, that's Lubavitch. V'haya Ki Yiviyacha is the second parsha. That's what we're going to call it. Now, when Hashem brings you to the Eretz Kanani, and again, there's a reference to setting apart every firstborn, and there's much more information in this, which is going to be the second parsha, about the firstborn. Okay, first of all, it's about setting aside the firstborn, and it tells you that it belongs to animals, males, every donkey, every lamb or kid, and if you do not redeem it, you have to kill it somehow, you have to take an axe to the back of its neck, and all the firstborn of an adam, of a person, you also shall redeem. In other words, it's consecrated to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and unless it's redeemed, you can't make use of it. It has a particular job. It can't function in the normal way as everybody else functions. It has to be designated to service of Hashem. Now, this whole mitzvah of sanctifying the firstborn, redeeming the firstborn, considering the firstborn, you know, and a special, and having a special status, that's also cause for question. V'haya ki yish'alcha bincha machar lemar mazos. When the child says, what is this? Now, which child is this?
Tom.
This is the Tom. The Tom is already asking a question. What is this? V'yamarta elav, you should say, Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim with a strong hand. And when Paro refused to send us, Hashem killed all their firstborns, animals and people. Therefore we now offer to Hashem any male firstborn and redeem all firstborn sons, because we were saved in a sense when Hashem killed all their firstborns. We were elevated to the status of firstborn, and their firstborns were destroyed, which is an indicative of the fact that they didn't have status in the eyes of Hashem. We are now the official firstborn, and that's why we do all of these mitzvahs. And this should be, you should write this concept and put it, V'haya la'os al yadcha, again. V'haya la'os. Now, was it considered an os in the first, a sign in the first parsha? Yes. Is this the same lashon, V'haya, and it should be for an os, same lashon? But now look how it talks about the tefillin shel rosh. It's not called a zikaron anymore. It's called letotafos, bein einecha. Now, totafos is a strange word. Chazal say it comes from two non-Jewish languages. Both languages, the word means double. So, test, tat, in the language of what is called the Kapti language, it means two. And the Afriki language, I don't know if they today represent the same, you know, the same nations that speak the same language, but at that time also means to pay the end, the pay tough. So this is a non-Jewish contraction of words somehow, of languages that existed at that time, in the time that Moshe was writing the Torah, and that's very important. But it's not called the Zikaron, it's called Letotafos Beinei Necha, and it reminds us that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. So this second parsha also is Vahayelecha, and it should be for you a sign. But Shel Rosh is not called the Zikaron, it's called Totafos. The question here that we're responding to is the Tam. And at the same time, there's a strong discussion here, a lot of information about Petarechem and our taking upon ourselves the status of Bechor, when all of their firstborns were removed from that position by the fact that they were all killed, indicated Hashem wanted nothing from their firstborns. We're going to get back to the importance of the firstborn. But that's clear, that's in Parshas Bo. Now, Parshas Bo, of course, these laws all take place at the time of, you know, are all taught to Klal Yisrael at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Later on, when Moshe is about to die, flip forward in Parshas Veschanan, and he talks to Klal Yisrael, and he gives them his last speeches, he makes reference also to the mitzvah of Tfilin Shel Yad and Tfilin Shel Rosh. And let's look at how they're referred to there. So first is Veschanan, Perek Vav, Sukkim Dalid through Tes, that's on 972. Now, this of course is familiar, very familiar. Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Yahavtas Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha. You know this. Now, Vishinantam Livanecha. What is the famous Rashi? Look into the Rashi. Vishinantam Livanecha. Rashi says on the words Livanecha. Who is Livanecha? Elu HaTalmidim. You should teach your Talmidim. This is not like the two, the She'ene Yidei Lishol and the Tam in Parshas Bo, which is specifically biological children. This is already a mitzvah to teach others, to teach Talmidim, everybody we come in contact with, whoever we can include in our conversation or bring in or initiate a conversation with. These are Talmidim. And Rashi goes on to tell you that in many places Talmidim are called Banim, and he gives you examples. So here there's a mitzvah of teaching your Talmidim all the time. Ukeshartam la'os al yadecha. That's a whole different type of lashon. Here in Veschanan, we're told, ukshartem, you shall tie, make knots. You should knot them onto your arm as a sign. But vahayu letotafos beinei necha, but they should be, which is much more passive, again, totafos, between your eyes. Now, you put on the tefillin shel yad using physical force. You put on the tefillin shel rosh using your also physically. You also, we just like you tie them, we tie, there's a kesher in both of them, behind the neck and on the arm. But regarding tefillin that go on the yad, it's called, the word is ukshartem. You should tie them, which means you should be actively involved. It's your job to tie them on, as opposed to in bow, vahayu, vahaya rather, and it should be a sign. These are ukshartem los. You should tie them on as a sign. But regarding tefillin shel rosh, that remains the same. Vahayu l'totafos b'nei necha. Okay? Now, this is the first parsha of Shema, of course, and the third reference to putting on tefillin. And the next reference to putting on tefillin comes in Perek Yud Gimel, which is on page 994. I'm sorry, Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Yud Gimel. And this is called Vahaya Im Shamoa. Okay, we're familiar with this too. And here it tells us that we have the same obligation here. Ukeshartem osam laos al yedchem. Again, active. You shall tie them as a sign on your hands. But again, Vahayu letotafos b'nei nechem. But they should be for totafos between your eyes. And then ulimadetem osam espenechem. And here ulimadetem osam espenechem, you should teach them to your children, also refers not just to your biological children, but to talmidim, who you are teaching. And that's the understanding of banim here, as was before. So this is more inclusive. So what our job here is to do, and what Rav Tzadok tries to do, and does succeeds in doing, is explaining to us the little differences in the four parshios. Now, these four parshios are written on separate little pieces of parchment, separate little scrolls, and put into the Shel Rosh in individual compartments. Whereas in the Shel Yad, they're all together. They're all written one after the other. There are no individual compartments in the Shel Yad. Okay? So the question here is, what is at the core of the differences in these, in the way the mitzvah is expressed in the four different parshios? So think chronologically. The first two parshios take, as we said, they are taught to Klal Yisrael on their exodus from Egypt, and therefore they are taught to Klal Yisrael before the great events of Matan Torah. Whereas the second references in Shema V'Hayim Shemoah are, of course, at the end of Moshe's life, when they're about to go into Eretz Yisrael, and therefore they take place after Matan Torah. Now, we know that at the time of Matan Torah, that's when Klal Yisrael made tefillin or received tefillin somehow, were taught about tefillin, and we've spoken about this, and we're not going to go back to this. But remember that we are told that when they served the Egel, everybody had to remove their ornaments, or they couldn't put their ornaments back on their back on themselves. And the ornaments, Rashi tells us, that are being made reference to in the Chumash are the tefillin. They received tefillin for two things they said. Nasev and Nishma, right? They received tefillin on Nasev and Nishma. These were their ornaments, their crowns, you might call it. And then after the Egel, they were not allowed to put on their crowns anymore. So we learned back there that tefillin is referred to, is considered a crown. Now, obviously, which tefillin is a crown? The Shel Yad? Obviously, the Shel Rosh is a crown. The Shel Yad would be quite a stretch to call it a crown, right? So when we're talking about the tefillin Shel Rosh, we're talking about a crown. Now, who crowns who? How does one receive a crown? A person doesn't just make a crown and put it on his head and does not really work that much. A person is crowned, and that only when a person is crowned by those that will defer to them or recognize their kavod, their honor, does that crown mean anything. So Klal Yisrael have to be crowned with the tefillin Shel Rosh by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If a person is crowned and the crown is placed on a person's head, then the person has glory in everybody's eyes, you would say that that crown is a sign of the glory of the person. Before Matan Torah, both the tefillin Shel Yad and the tefillin Shel Rosh are referred to as Vahaya Lacha Laos, or Vahaya, right, it will be for you an os, which seems to imply that this is bestowed upon Klal Yisrael and functions for them as a sign for them. And in the first one, in Kadesh, a zikaron, a reminder for them, a memory of what Hashem did for them. But they're not actively involved. Prior to Matan Torah, we did not have mitzvahs. We barely had any merits, let alone mitzvahs. We had the same mitzvahs that everybody else did, and a few more, we admit, were given, like a Rosh Chodesh, Korban Pesach, to redo the Bris Milah. That's true. At that point, they had a few mitzvahs that made them, identified them as Klal Yisrael, prior to Matan Torah. But we didn't have the entire Torah. So you can't really say that Klal Yisrael themselves were capable of doing, of behaving, of acting in a way that made it clear that they were the Am Hashem. Not to the extent that it was after Matan Torah. So Tzadok says that putting on the tefillin, Shel Yad, now Shel Yad always represents your pu'ulot, your actions. Yad always, it's classic. Yadayim, we spoke about this with Yadayim Yidei Esav. Yeah, the Yad is the hishtadlus, what you do, what you create, what you implement. The ideas begin in the head, and then you implement them with your arm. And what people can see is not so much the ideas in one's head, but what they make out of them practically. The society you build, the home life you build, the actions you take, the way you conduct your life, that's called the hand, the arm. So prior to Matan Torah, Klal Yisrael didn't have that much to identify them as Hashem's unique nation and Am Segula. So prior to Matan Torah, the fact that we put on tefillin, shel yad and shel rosh, and that was a sign that we were unique, that we were HaKadosh Baruch Hu's special nation, that was almost like a gift. V'haya lacha la'os. I will give you something to show, to demonstrate that you that this is a sign that Hashem took you out of Mitzrayim, that you are my firstborn child, but you really can't do it on your own. You haven't been given the mitzvahs yet. That put that into play, that put that into action. And at that point, the child that you're speaking to is your biological child, and here we go into a technical difference. The first one, the tefillin shel rosh, are called the zikaron. The second one, that's in Kaddish. In Vahaya Kiyiviyacha, they're already called the totafos, which totafos, Rashi tells us, is a crown. That's lashon. That's the lashon of some type of crown, of an ornament, unlike a zikaron. There are two madregas prior to Matan Torah. There's She'eni Dei Lishol, and there's the Tam. The lowest of all, the one who doesn't have a clue, the one who's being given, who greatness is being bestowed upon them, that they are elevated, that they are my firstborn child, that they hold a special role, and they don't even know, they don't understand it at all, they don't even have a deep grasp of it, they don't even get the workings of it. They're She'eni Yadei Lishol. They don't even know what to ask. To them, at that point in Jewish history, that's who we were as a nation in Jewish history. We were a nation in slavery who didn't know the role we were yet to play. Moshe's hardest job of all his jobs was to convince this people that shortly before his birth had decided that they were insignificant, his own father. They had no story to tell. They had no role to play. They might as well just die out, not have children. That's Amram and Yocheved's divorce. Let's just die out. We play no important role. We have nothing to offer society. We're not relevant here. If we're gone, so we're just another ethnic clan that's gone. Who cares if we're gone? They themselves had total yeyush, total, you know, sense of hopelessness and a lack of understanding of the role they would play. Moshe's hardest job was to come to this nation and convince them that they had a huge and glorious future and a major role to play. And the first thing Moshe had to do was bring them, he gave them two zechuyot, two merits, and that was Bris Milah and Korban Pesach. Other than that, they were very similar philosophically to the Egyptians. They were all practically, they were deeply immersed in Avodah Zarah, as we know. The only merit that released them from that was the Korban Pesach and Bris Milah, which showed they had a kesher to Hashem, and that they were willing to turn their back on the Avodah Zarah of the Egyptians. The Aries, they worshipped the ram, the Aries, and the Tleh, and they turned their back on that. They would have to turn their back on that. And so these were their two zchuyot, these were their two merits. Other than that, they were deeply immersed in Avodah Zarah. So here Moshe's got to convince them that their vision has to go in a whole new direction. What's in store for them is things they can't even contemplate. But they're going to always bear a sign on them, starting here with tefillin, right in the beginning, that they are designated for a higher purpose, and they are crowned, and they are decorated in a way that proves that they are, you know, they play a whole different role. But this in a sense is referred to in a passive way. V'haya lacha la'os. We will place it upon you, and it will be a sign for you, whether you don't even understand what it's a sign of. Eventually you'll understand the import of these signs. But for the She'eni Yadei Lishol, even the tefillin shel rosh, even the tefillin shel rosh, which indicate understanding, the mind, machshava, because in the end, we serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu with our mind. Two people can do the same action. In one case, it could be an avera, and the other case, it could be a mitzvah. The only thing that makes a difference between the actions is the kavana of the person doing it. A person could give money, and it could be done with a love, ava, and chesed, and compassion, and to fulfill the mitzvah of tzedakah. If that's in the person's mind, then that act of giving money is a mitzvah. Or a person can give money with frustration to get to, so that they don't have to be bothered anymore by this person. And it's a way of really, it's built into it as sinas chinam for the fact that the person's asking for the money. It could be a total avera. Okay, it's all in the head. It's all in the head. The kavanah of the person changes the action. Tefillin shel rosh imply that we serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu with our mind, and what connects us to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the head and the mind. But for the person who doesn't yet have a grasp, they're she'eni yadei elishol. So what does tefillin shel rosh do for them? So it's, and that's us on our most primitive level, on our beginning when we were in our infancy. It reminds us that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, and therefore we have a unique position, and it reminds us to keep the Yetzer under control. But yet at the same time, it's going, the tefillin shel rosh are going to fulfill a much greater purpose than just reminding the person that they have obligations and they play a special role. It's going to do much more than that. Eventually, it's going to play a role not just for the person wearing them. It's going to play a role for everybody who sees the person wearing the tefillin. But that's already when the person's functioning on a higher level. So first you have the she'eni yadei elishol. It's an oath. It's a zikaron. You don't understand what you're involved in. You don't understand the greatness of the system that you're participating in. Just do what you have to do. And the tefillin for this person is a sign from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that they hold a special place. And for the person, it reminds them of that. V'haya ki yiviyacha, the next parsha, is already talking about one step beyond that. We're talking about a tam. This person can ask a question. They see something's going on, and they say, Mazos, tell me more. And we see what this particular person understands is the concept of the Bechar. That's what's stressed in this parsha, that there's a special connection between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the firstborn. Now, this is already a great departure from what was going on in the world at that time. Till today, our enemies, the ones that plague us, every day, and not just our enemies, but primitive societies, all primitive societies, the way their societies are organized, is basically, well, not all primitive, but the ones that make trouble, and the ones that are the vicious and the cruel, the way, and the ones that we can't really work with, the way those societies are organized is there is a great reverence and a respect and a worshiping of the strong man, of the authority figure. If somebody has the ability to be powerful, then that is what is respected, and the crueler and the more powerful and the more controlling they are, the more they are worthy of respect. This is how so many societies are organized. Power and authority. There is no sympathy in these societies for the weak, for the helpless. Because they are weak and they are helpless, therefore they deserve to be overcome, overwhelmed, controlled, misused, and abused. Klal Yisrael brought a whole different perspective into the world. When Hashem said, I don't want your firstborns, because the firstborn represented that. The firstborn in Egyptian society and in these other societies means the strongest, the first, the one who could control the ones beneath them. Because every time in Jewish history, and this is a classic idea, there was a firstborn. That firstborn, which was in a sense born with a certain status to dominate, to control, lost their status. Starting right from the beginning. Cain and Hevel, right? Cain, Avraham was not the firstborn. Yishmael and Yitzchak, Yaakov and Esav, straight through Reuven and Yehuda, Menashe and Ephraim, straight through the firstborn, the one born with what would seem the natural right to be dominant, to rule, lost that position, and the position of firstborn was actually given to the person who wasn't firstborn, so the whole concept of firstborn takes on a whole meaning, and it's the one who earns the right to be considered the leader of his brothers. Earns the right to be considered the ruler, the guide, the one who sets the tone. So that Bechor by us, when Hashem says, B'ni Bechor Yisrael, Klal Yisrael is not the first nation to come into existence. We're not the older brother of all the nations. We're much, much younger. We came into existence after there were many, many, hundreds of nations already in existence. Bechor by us has a meaning. It doesn't mean born into that status. It means earning the status. We earn the status of firstborn. The only firstborn in history that is guaranteed never to lose their status is Klal Yisrael. When Hashem said, B'ni Bechor Yisrael, that's forever. Now, how did we earn the status of my firstborn child? We earned it in Mitzrayim. That's how we earned it. We earned that name and that title in Mitzrayim, and we know that in Mitzrayim we didn't have a lot of mitzvahs. But one thing Mitzrayim did for us is it turned Klal Yisrael into a nation, and we've spoken about this, Goy Gadol, we spoke about this. Goy Gadol, a great nation, a nation that's very big. We weren't big in numbers. Gadol always refers to chesed, often refers to chesed. We became a nation in the Kor HaBarzel that we were fashioned in the Kor HaBarzel into a nation that is sympathetic, full of chesed, takes care of the weak and the helpless and the old and the sick and those who are just not equipped to survive as well as other people because they don't have the brains or the smarts or they don't get it or they're just not set up in life. We protect the weak and the helpless. That became the identifying mid of Klal Yisrael and Golus. And that's what made us the firstborn, the one that takes responsibility for the youngers. It's a completely alternative understanding of firstborn. We don't revere the powerful one that dominates. It's exactly what we don't revere. We revere the powerful one who doesn't dominate, who withholds his power in order to ensure that everybody also can live. That is the legacy of Klal Yisrael. That's Goy Gadol. And that's the great ideas that made their way through history to emerge today in the few decent nations that exist on earth where this powerful restrain their power and don't take advantage of the opportunity to overwhelm everybody else in their path. So here, this child says Mazos. This is already asking a question. And they're recognizing that Klal Yisrael is totally unique in the way we understand the concept of firstborn child. Totally unique. Now, to this child already, the ideas of Klal Yisrael are in the brain. They're not just gonna abide by the laws because they're told to without any deep understanding, like the Sheinei De'elishol, and therefore they wear tefillin, but it's a reminder who they are. These tefillin already become a whole nother, something else here, this tefillin Shel Rosh. This is a child that understands Klal Yisrael play a different role, and our ideas are different, and our ideas in the end are not just for ourselves to keep us straight and out of the clutches of the Yetzer Hara. Our ideas are much bigger. Our ideas are eventually to influence mankind about how societies are meant to be set up and how people are supposed to live together. And here already, Bahaya L'chalos, here it's still given to you as a sign because we didn't have mitzvahs. We didn't have mitzvahs yet, so it's still passive. It's a sign on your hand, but it's already totafos b'nei necha. Totafos already means a crown. And here's the famous, famous pasuk from, this is the famous pasuk from Devarim, Perek Chavches, pasuk Yud, which says, V'ra'u kol amei ha'aretz, all of the nations of the world should see, Kishem Hashem Nikra Alecha, that the name of Hashem is called upon you. Not the name, you are called the name of Hashem, but the name of Hashem has been bestowed upon you, and that's the shin in the tefillin Shel Rosh. When a person puts on tefillin Shel Rosh, and the whole tefillin Shel Rosh in the end is all only really effective, and the shin is the most important part of the whole tefillin Shel Rosh. Without the shin, nothing else really matters. The fact is that when a person puts on tefillin Shel Rosh and they understand more already, like the Tom, it becomes a crown that everybody can see, and they see that the name of Hashem has been bestowed upon these people. How do they see the name of Hashem bestowed upon the people? Because the people understand way more than everybody else understands, and their legacy and their message is for everybody. And they're representing ideas that the world will come to know. So that pasuk Chazal say is a direct reference to Tefillin Shel Rosh, that the nations will see that the name of Hashem has been bestowed upon you, and you are called by that name. This is Devarim, Perek Chav Ches, pasuk Yud. V'ra'u kol amei ha'aretz, all the nations of the world will see. Kishem Hashem nikra elecha. And the Gemara says, Elu Tfilin Shabarosh. That's a Tfilin Shabarosh. That's the reference of the Tzitzapos, which Chazal say is an ornament and a crown for everybody, bestowed upon Klal Yisrael. But you see, it's not called that by the Sheinei De'elishol. It comes with the Seichel of Klal Yisrael, knowing who we are and how we're different and the role we play and beginning to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the head, through our Seichel, through Machshava, through understanding. That's the beginning of being able to represent ideas to everybody else. If a person doesn't understand anything, but they keep the straight and narrow because Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim and these are the mitzvahs, so the tefillin are a zikaron. They help. It helps the person. But for the tefillin to become totafos, an ornament or in a crown, is already a whole another development in the machshava. But still at this point, v'haya l'chalos, it will be bestowed upon you. Because we don't have the mitzvahs yet. Once you get to Devarim, that's Shema and V'hayim Shemoa, that's already after we've been given the mitzvahs. And there the Lashon changes. It doesn't say V'hayim L'chalos. It says Ukshartem La'os Al Yadechem. You should tie it. You should yourself take the initiative and tie them on your hands so it should be a sign. And then yet V'hayu L'totafos Beinei Necha. And it will be an ornament on your head. So here what changes? Something changes and something doesn't change. Once we have the mitzvahs, the actions, that we take the initiative, we do the mitzvahs, we are tying the tefillin upon our hands, that means we are, through our mitzvahs, doing the actions, doing the works that make us unique and that show the world that we live a different type of life. But does that bestow the crown of, does that, by what we do, have we succeeded by ourselves of ensuring that the name of Hashem should be seen to be bestowed upon us? That still comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'hayu l'totafos bein nech, Hashem will bestow upon you that status, that aura, that His name is called, that you have been called, in a sense, by the name of Hashem. In other words, we're saying this. What can Klal Yisrael really do? We can do the mitzvahs. But it's only through the mitzvahs that we do that it becomes, it evolves, it becomes obvious that the name of Hashem has been bestowed upon us. Not because of the mitzvahs, but as a result of the mitzvahs. To define this further, I want you to flip to a pasuk here, Veschanan Perek Dalet. This is a nuance. It's a very delicate nuance, but also indicates what a unique, you know, how completely unique our understanding and the way we set up our society is. What is it? Veschanan here. Devarim Perek Dalet. Psukim Hey and Vav. So it's on page 960. How do you read these two psukim? Re'ei. Limadati eschem chukim u'mishpatim. I've taught you chukim u'mishpatim. Kacher tzivani Hashem Elokai, as God has taught me, has commanded me, Moshe speaking. Lasos came to do them. Bekerav ha'aretz asher etem ba'im shamalusha. You have to do these mitzvahs and these mishpatim and chukim in the land that you're coming. Ushamartem, guide, preserve them. V'yasisem, that's always lo sasein ase, right? Preserve them and do them. Ki he, because she, that's singular. Chachmaschem ubinaschem le'enei ha'amim. She is, or it is, your chachma and your bina in the eyes of the nation. What is the word he referring to? You should do them and preserve them, guard them and do them in the land you're coming to, because it is your chachma and your bina in the eyes of the nation. What is the word it referring to? Is it referring to the chukim and the mishpatim that I just taught you? If it would be referring to the chukim and the mishpatim, then it should have said ki heim, because they are chachmaschem ubinaschem. They are your chachma and your bina. But it's talking about it. It is your chachma and your bina. What is that? Doing the mitzvahs, the lois ases and the ases, that is the source of what the goyim consider your chachma and your bina. Now wait a minute. Just going through the motions, just doing the actions, the goyim will see as your chachma and your bina. But how is just keeping the laws, following the laws, going to express itself? The goyim are going to see that as genius and brilliant. Anybody can go through actions. Actions don't. What if somebody's doing the actions and they have no idea what they're about? Would you say that is our chokhmah and our bina? Somebody asks somebody, why do you wash Negel Vasser in the morning. I go, I have no idea. Why do you Tovel Kalim? I have no idea. Why can't you eat? What does it matter if the animal shechted here or here? I don't know. It's a chok. That's Chochma and Bina in the eyes of the nations. It's only when we can explain the mitzvahs we think that's called the Chochma and the Bina in the eyes of the nations. So here this is Fasema says. It doesn't say it all like this. He makes a quick little reference to it, but fleshing it out. The way we set our society is set up is completely different than every other society that was ever built, even the best of them. For example, America. So a couple hundred years ago, there was a group of brilliant thinkers, unique practically in the world. You know that these people all lived at the same time and were of exceptional understanding and greatness of spirit. George Washington was offered a crown and was the first person probably in the history of the world that refused to wear a crown because he understood that the society once great would be of a different nature. And they decided to set up this country with the whole way this country is set up, definitely based on biblical morality. Now what happens first and what happens second? Do you first set up a concept, laws, a vision, what you want the world, the society to look like, how you want it to function, what would you want the people in the society to live like? How should their life be like? You have a concept, you have an idea, and then you set up laws, a constitution, in order to protect those ideas and implement those ideas, right? Isn't that the natural way things go? You come up with an idea, and then you make the practical rules that will ensure that that idea is actually, you know, manifested in real life. That's how a normal society is set up. Even the best of them. Klal Yisrael doesn't work like that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not give us a whole huge discourse on mysticism and philosophy and imitating the nature of God and then give us mitzvahs to express those things. That's not what happened. Hashem gave us mitzvahs, period. End of story. Mitzvahs. Do the mitzvahs. With the philosophy, without the philosophy, just conduct your life according to these practical rules. 613 billion of them. We know there's not 613, right? I mean, technically, categories, but there's so many mitzvahs. Just do the mitzvahs. Just do the mitzvahs. When you do the mitzvahs, what will emerge, with or without your intention, in a certain sense, is a society of a very unique nature. Just do the mitzvahs of shechita and don't eat carnivorous animals and eat herbivorous animals only and shech them according to halacha and you know what will happen? You will, after hundreds and thousands of years, become a people that are balei rachmanus because none of our grandmothers ever rang a chicken's neck. That's not how we killed our chickens. And none of our grandparents ever ripped apart an animal and ate it, you know, live, or boiled a lobster live. That's not what we did. So eventually, it makes us into a people that are balei rachmanus. Whether that's the reason for the mitzvah or not, it creates a new type of human being. Just keeping the mitzvahs creates eventually a society emerges which the goyim can look at how that society functions and says, chachmo, bina. But it's not built off the fact that we're all big, huge philosophers and intellectuals. It's built off the mitzvahs. Doing the mitzvahs correctly, and of course, with the kavanas that we have, it's better to do a mitzvah with a kavana than without a kavana. But in the end, what is built from it, what emerges from it, is much, much greater than the individuals and the practical actions they're going through. So, v'hi chachmaschem, just doing the mitzvahs becomes your chachma and your bina le'enei hagoyim. And the truth is, the fact that Klal Yisrael stuck to the mitzvahs created a type of society that this country is built off. That this country is built off biblical values because they understood what happens when you just live according to these laws. And they wanted to imitate it because it was the best thing ever worked, experimented with, or that showed results in a positive way. So here, after Matan Torah, ukshartam la'osal yadecha, you do the mitzvahs. That's the pulos. The hand is the mitzvahs. You do the mitzvahs, and what will happen? V'hayu l'totofos b'neinecha, and they will become a crown. Uru kal amei ha'aretz kishem Hashem nikra elecha, and they will see that Hashem's name is bestowed upon you. So regarding that connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Chochmah and the Bina, and the name of Hashem upon us, in other words, our spiritual life and vibrancy, that in the end is a result of our mitzvahs that we do, and yet it's not directly, we don't create it. It's bestowed upon us. Prior to Matan Torah, we didn't even have the mitzvahs. So even the tefillin shel yad, even the actions, was like bestowed upon us as a symbol. The tefillin shel yad was a symbol, but yet we didn't have, that symbol wasn't expressed in 1,000,000,000 different ways yet. After Matan Torah, the symbol of the tefillin is expressed through our mitzvahs, and so we, in a sense, create the importance of that symbol even more. And yet still, in the end, the higher spheres, the spheres of understanding, are granted upon us by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, interestingly enough, our ancestors, our mothers and our fathers, way back, Sarah and Avraham, we're going way back, their job was, really could be defined in three words. The reason they were chosen and the reason and what they contributed to the world was really three words. Korei b'shem Hashem. That was their job. Avram came to Canaan, he set up a mizbeach, and he was Korei b'shem Hashem. So was Yitzchak, and eventually so was Yaakov. Korei b'shem Hashem. So first we prepare ourselves and we become a nation by our commitment to be Korei b'shem Hashem, call out in the name of Hashem, seek out HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Everybody who went out of Mitzrayim did so as a volunteer. Nobody was compelled. Received the Torah. Agreed to do the mitzvahs with more understanding, with less understanding. That's Nasa v'nishma, which should not be confused with what we're talking about now. That's to do the mitzvahs with more or less understanding. First do, then understand, even do without understanding. Receive tefillin, which is the next step, which indicates that when we do the mitzvahs, we understand that we're creating what will be, we're making really the transition from us being Korei b'shem Hashem through our actions to the eventual reality that Hashem's name, Shem Hashem Nikra Alecha, the name of Hashem is bestowed upon us. And it will be seen by everybody to be really that the name of Hashem to be hovering above the Jewish people. And each Jewish person who does the practical mitzvahs along the way, they are part of that eventual, you know, descent of the Shem Hashem upon us. Now, let's point this out. In the beginning, before Matan Torah, it says you should answer your children, your biological children. After Matan Torah, we're already talking about everybody. That's not just the Jews. That is Talmidim. Everybody eventually are Talmidim. Because there we have the mitzvahs to do. We take the initiative. We set up the society this way and our lives this way. And then everybody becomes a Talmid after Matan Torah and sees our behavior and sees all the little nuances of our day-to-day life. And then the name of Hashem eventually is bestowed upon Klal Yisrael through that. And then this is how we fulfill the destiny of being a Bechor, of being the firstborn of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, by earning that through our behavior and through the way we are role models for the rest of the nations. So in the end, the tefillin represent for Klal Yisrael the basic yisod, the basic simple idea of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu offers us at Har Sinai. Do you want to be Or LaGoyim? And what we're learning here is this. To be Or LaGoyim doesn't mean we have to explain through complicated philosophical discourses the nature of God and all that philosophy. Or LaGoyim is the mitzvahs. The mitzvahs we do with our actions. Now, but let's end with just talking about the importance of Lima Torah. Now, tefillin is worn by men. This is true. And we are potter because Mrs. Asher says man grama. However, the whole concept of tefillin shel rosh, that Hashem's name is called upon us, is when the actions we do ultimately lead to a society that is elevated and intelligent and sensitive and understanding. The mitzvahs, of course, are meant to be combined with understanding. The tefillin shel rosh, I don't want to denigrate the serving Hashem with our minds, with our seichel, with our machshava, with our learning. The tefillin shel rosh represents aspiring, but we can never reach it, not even Moshe Rabbeinu, to understanding Hashem, to being able to explain all the millions of Svarim we have, are all the philosophy Svarim, are all about trying to take that next step in understanding and the Chachma and the Bina that somehow radiates also to the world at large. Now, women also have a mitzvah of Lima Torah. Although we don't put tefillin on our heads, which implies that the Shem Hashem is Nikra Aleinu through our seichel, through our ideas, through understanding, through the being the people of the book, the wise people, the people who understand more than everybody else. We're not, we don't wear tefillin Shel Rosh to as a simen, as an obvious simen from that. Women are also chayiv, of course, in learning as much Torah as they can. The one difference between men and women in Lima Torah is the following. Women have a mitzvah to do, we have all the positive mitzvahs. We, except the Shizman Grama, and of course all the low sases. And everything that has to do with keeping those mitzvahs properly is a chiyuv. We have to learn Torah. That we have a mitzvah of Lima Torah. Anything that has to do with learn, with knowing how to keep the halachas that are, we are obligated in is part of Lima Torah. Which includes learning philosophy. Which includes learning Chumash and Mefarshim and Halacha and anything that's going to increase a person's ability to do the mitzvahs correctly and increase a person's Yirah Shemayim. And that's why with Chafetz Chaim, when it became clear that women didn't know enough and they weren't going to be able to remain religious with the limited knowledge they were given, he, of course, gave his blessings to Sarah Shneira to teach much, much more than women had ever been taught. And as society changes and the more women need the Torah as an anchor and a stronghold and need to know more and need to learn more in order to combat the influences that are drawing them in the other direction, they have to learn more and more. As long as it serves the purpose of keeping having Yirah Shemayim. What women are not chayav in, what we're potter in, my grandfather explained this to me once we took our class to Washington Heights in my grandfather's house and there was an open ask the rabbi kind of session, and he discussed this. So what women are putter from is learning Torah just for the sake of learning Torah and has no practical application. For example, if a man learns a particular halacha 100 times and knows it back and forth, and he just learns the Gemara associated with that halacha or any type of Torah associated with that halacha, again, for the sake of learning Torah, that's the mitzvah of Lima Torah for a man. A woman is not chayiv in that. Just to learn as no practical application or no additional Yirah Shemayim or no greater understanding. Anything she needs to be a better Jew, that's called the Hechsher Mitzvah. It's part of the mitzvah itself. Of course she's chayav. Just to learn Torah because I have an hour and I can't waste it, so I'll learn and I'll learn something I already learned and know perfectly. That's a chayav on a man. Okay, to do that. But other than that, we have a tremendous chayav. And the more a person understands, the more person learning Torah, in a sense, is understanding, at least understanding, serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu with our minds. In the end, the connection of a person to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in the head, is in the seichel, because the seichel is going to affect how the mitzvahs are done, if they're done correctly and if they're done with the proper kavanas. And we'll end on this just kind of mystical note. We'll end on this mystical note that... what's left of a person in the end? What is left of a person in the end? When there's no more body, okay? Think, we say the neshama is left. But think for a second. If a person here, we can imagine, okay, and you know, and there's a really, you can read this, and Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan, If You Were God, has a section on this. If a person here can imagine that Chas V'Shalom, their legs were amputated, their arms are amputated. Let's say the whole body was amputated. Okay, we can imagine not having legs or arms and still having our mind. If the whole body was amputated, what lives on is the person's mind. That person goes up into Shemayim, and that seichel of the person exists. And what that seichel is made up of is all the kavanas they had their whole life. And just like down here, we have physical features so that we recognize each other based on our physical features. So every neshama has spiritual features, and it's the kavanas of the person. Not the actions of the person necessarily, those are gone, the physical body is gone, but the kavanas of the person live forever. And that makes up the person, that is their features, that is their identity. In the end, the part that lives is the machshava, is the mind. Not the gray matter of the brain, but the kavanas of the person in their mind, the thoughts they thought, what was behind every action. That lives forever. In the end, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is all sechli, is all abstract, is all ruchnius, is all ideas, and in the end, it's just our ideas that live forever also. So what we're saying is, of course, there's a connection between the physical, the actions, and the ideas, but we are unique in that our actions will express ideas even if we're not up to those ideas. Even if we don't grasp those ideas, our behavior will in and of itself express those ideas as we catch up and attempt to understand those ideas too. By the way, what Moshe saw, when Moshe asked Hashem, Tzadik Baralo, he saw Kesher Tefillin of the Shel Rosh. And that, and when he saw the Kesher Tefillin, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling him is, what Hashem was telling him is that there is a whole world of the Shel Rosh that you don't understand, of the Machshav that you don't understand and you can't know in this world. One day you'll know. So even if we haven't caught up with all of the ideas that are out there, nevertheless, we continue the behaviors, the mitzvahs, because they will eventually become for us those ideas and bring us to the place of where ideas alone exist. And that's quite a striking idea that deeds can create eternal knowledge and eternal understanding. Okay. Why?